Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Guys, happy Friday, and thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. On today's program, Ilya Topuria has responded to Joe Rogan comments. We're going to hear from him. Plus, Tom Aspinall has some concerns about the July event being held in Manchester, and we apparently have a pay-per-view this Saturday, as usual. We got a lot to get to on today's show, but let's begin with the most pressing news of the day. So Ryan Garcia tests hot for his fight with Devin Haney. Now, I mean, I must tell you guys that this is somewhat breaking news, but in the world of news, I have been very surprised at what a quiet sound this has made. For example, I mean, I'm on the dirt sheets right now, and there's a couple of stories, not for nothing, there is a couple of stories, and one of them is still the lead story. But the other story that's on the main page is four down. And that surprises me. Like, this isn't an overly busy week in the world of combat. There has been some real struggles to get a little conversation going. And the fact that Ryan Garcia tested hot in what was no less than a circus attraction leading into the contest, of which is a compliment coming from me. I mean, the way I say it, because I enjoy the entertainment, it's four down and that's on the dirt sheets. That's not even on the real sites. So that would be my first takeaway. Now, I don't now or ever want to come to you guys as a person who's been on the wrong side of drug tests and then make light of that situation. I also can't look at this and wonder why they were ever involved. Right? I mean, an accusation is one thing. The person making the accusation is a completely other weight. And in an ordinary circumstance, this fight between Garcia and Haney took place in California. In a regular circumstance, you would have a statement made by the California State Athletic Commission. And instantly, simultaneously with that statement would be a suspension. You would then have within the press release that Garcia has the right to a commission hearing and one is set for date X. You will then have people that want to come out and tell you that he will have his day in court, which is just as aggravating as any of the other situations. There is no disinterested third party that looks at a situation like this. There is no day in court. There's a day when you go before the very people who have already found you guilty. And in the history of doing those, they've never looked at it and said, you know what? We were wrong. You were right. Why do I bring that up? Well, this was done by VADA. Now, VADA stands for Volunteer Anti-Doping Agency. It is one of the stranger concepts of anything that I've ever heard in this sport. And I mean, this is a sport that is a band of misfits from the highest degree. And of all those bizarre characters and ideas and notions, I mean, right. Yeah, I mean, just break it down how bizarre this sport is. The sport ultimately is a business. And at the grassroots level, what does that mean? What is the farthest common denominator you could put into the sport? A gym. That's right. Where you begin and where you train. So now you have people that are beginning in training. Generally, they don't have two digits in their age. They start at 6, 7, 8, or 9. And you have a parent that brought them down there, looked around, saw what was going on, and decided to pay a monthly membership. That's a very bizarre concept. I'm going to drop my kid off, and for sure, he's going to learn to punch another kid, and for sure, he's going to be punched in the face. And I'm going to pay you, the coach, for making sure that happens. Like, that's a really weird concept. And of all the really weird concepts in this sport, somebody volunteering to put themselves in danger is right at the top of the list of weird things that you could possibly do. So let's back up to this volunteer anti-doping agency. You have to agree to go in it, and it's a side deal. No commission sees it. Now, no commission wants it to even be there. They just won't come out and tell you that. No promoter wants it. None. This isn't a broad stroke. Zero commissions wish this agency existed, and zero promoters want you to go and be part of this agency. Now, I could lay out why I say that, but I'm going to just take for granted that you have the sense that God gave geese to understand nobody doing business wants anything that can interfere with that business, that is any risk higher than the one that you've already signed off agreeing to take. Okay, great. Now, the fighters don't know what this means, but you will have them throw it out. You will have a fighter at a press conference saying, we're going to do VADA. And if the other person just simply said, what does it stand for? They wouldn't know. And if they said, well, who founded it? They would not know. And if you said, hey, what's that lady that's in charge of it? They could not produce the name. And I bring you all of these things because only a fool would go into something where there was no benefit. Do you guys know who founded VADA? She's a very beautiful woman, very intelligent. Heart's in the right place. Does a really good job over there. Do you know where there is? Do you know what state that's in? Are you positive it's in a state? Would it be easier if I told you just tell me what country VADA's at? And I wouldn't expect any of you to know the president, a board member, the CEO. I would not expect any of you to know any of that. Where it's funding, when their meetings are. But I would ask you very simple questions, such as, what's it stand for? And when we deduce that you have no idea, therein lies is the entire reason why would an athlete go into it? Like, if you were going to get credit, if Margaret had a PR team that could bring cameras in and get you in headlines for passing the test, you would begin to have a conversation of something you could get for it. You would begin to start to see why I'm going to subject myself to this, because it can cancel my job. It can cancel my reputation. I can lose all of my sponsors. The contest itself could have a result that's reversed or, depending when the test comes in, canceled in its entirety. Andre Berto, clearly juiced, somehow was beating the systems and thought he could beat VADA. VADA's very good. Of course, Andre Berto didn't pass that, but that fight never happened. It never went forward. There is no way to sanction Ryan Garcia at this point, including financially. You could get a ruling against him. You could get a judgment against him. And if he was to return to that same location or a sister commission, there is a chance that right out of the gate, you could get a financial deficit against Ryan, but it's unlikely. And if he was to do what Brock Lesnar did when he tested hot, which is to just never fight again, you're never even getting paid. So meanwhile, you've got Devin Haney that wants the credit. He wants people to know. He wants them to understand. We have a state that oversaw this who is yet to make a statement. Now, a state oftentimes will accept the results if they have access to a drug test. But I'm telling you from Jump Street, which no commissioner is ever going to tell Margaret Goodman, Chael's right. No commission wants VADA to exist. They don't want to work with them. They don't want to have things like this where we who do testing did not catch a guy and you did. So now you just advertise for the world that you're better at than we are. It's one of these spots. It's one of these very peculiar spots within the sport. And why Ryan Garcia or any other athlete without any positive repercussion would ever subject themselves willingly to VADA is a really bad decision to make. So we got VADA, and VADA is going head-to-head with a state athletic commission. Now, there are some supplements that are very hard to find. There's a number of supplements that are legal that you guys think are illegal. There's a number of substances that are illegal that many believe are allowed. And it just starts to be a very odd environment. But when you have Ryan Garcia testing positive through the voluntary anti-doping agency, but he cleared the tests of the actual governing body, which is funded by the government, you run into a problem. Now, I want to push all of those things to the side. You have something known as logic, and if you've ever got a little bit of free time, there's actually a book, and it's called The Laws of Logic. I would recommend you try it out sometime. You might appreciate it. But things generally are not as complicated as we like to make them seem, and conspiracies can really be broken down. And in most situations, the most obvious answer is the answer. So whenever you're dealing with somebody that is willing to break the law and or kill themselves with substance use, whenever you have that, and that same person is confronted and afforded the opportunity to take something that is not criminal and that will help them, the laws of logic say they will. Let me explain. Ryan Garcia appears to be a cokehead. Right now, he's on something for sure that makes him twitchy. He's attempted to explain that by saying that it is use and possibly even abuse of ADD medication. That could be. Like, if you were just to look at his mannerisms, whoever handed him that alibi, that is actually a pretty good one. The doctors could have given him Adderall. That's true. Now, he could have elected to take two when the bottle said one. He could have elected to crush it and snort it up to lead to the same physical effects and behaviors that cocaine would do. And that would be a solid alibi, which is the one that he went with and the one that you all accepted. It was that good, right? It was that good of a reasonable explanation. Okay. But when you have a guy that does cocaine, and we've had plenty of these in sports caught with cocaine, and get put in a position where they then have to say, I use cocaine. That same person will look down the barrel of that same camera and speak to the same audience and say that they had never taken a performance-enhancing drug. So this is what we're now being asked to believe. Cocaine, which if you're in possession of, will get you placed in handcuffs. And if you were to take too much of, will explode your heart and kill you. Is there any disagreements there? We understand that cocaine is against the law, and we also understand that doing too much will kill you. Any disagreements? Okay, great. So steroids, while giving a dirty and filthy name through the media, through athletes who chose to use them to cheat, are legal. Oh, by the way, they'll make you better. So if you got a person that was willing to do the illegal thing that will kill them, why on earth would you think that they wouldn't do the legal thing that would help them? And it's really helpful to just put this in baseball terms, which I assume is how everybody learned about making out. First base, second base, third base, right? Like you have these things. Now, let's say you had a person, and I know your junior high has had it the same as me, but this topic makes me a little bit uncomfortable. So I'm going to beat around the bush a little bit, and you have a person who got to third base. You are never going to have to ask that person, have you kissed somebody before? If they got to third base, you're never even going to have to say, did you kiss somebody before? Because that was first base. So if you know they got to third, you don't even have to ask certain questions. Are you with me? Can we beat around the bush but still be very clear with each other? So if you meet somebody that's done cocaine, then you never have to say to them, have you had a beer? Have you tasted alcohol? Have you been to a party? There's things that you don't ever have to ask them if you know that they've done cocaine. So to make believe that you're surprised that Ryan Garcia, who tweaked out in front of you all, couldn't fully explain it. So we got as close to, I do the dope, I drink the drink, and I got a prescription for Adderall that makes me a little twitchy. You would never need to ask that person, have you taken performance-enhancing agents? They've already told you, right? They got to third base. They've already told you about first and second. And it always leads to a situation because you'll never have somebody that offers it. Like that day just will not come. Somebody that offers it ahead of time. So you know what? I took this. I didn't know it was banned. You know what? I took this. I knew it was banned. I removed myself from the sport for a little while. I took this. I knew it was banned. I crossed my fingers and puckered up real tight that nobody would come. Like, there will never, ever be an explanation ahead of time. There will only be the excuse after it's done. And it all starts with Captain Confused. Captain Confused is, I don't even know what that is. As though that would be relevant. Like, as though you not knowing where that is or where to get it or how it's made would be at all relevant to you having taken it knowingly and willfully. But it'll always be the same story. It'll always be that over and over again. And the bigger issue right now is not between Garcia and Haney. And what, if anything, did they have in their contract? The much bigger issue right now, and it's 10 to 1, it is 10 to 1, is who has authority over the results that allegedly have been found? And what is the disciplinary action, if any, going to be? Did a piece, and we take this with a grain of salt, right? Like, he was just sharing his opinion. He was being very polite while he was doing it, but there were two sides to a coin, and Tom, as the British fighter, let alone the British champion, had to take the side that he did, of which was for the British. Now, the argument goes like this. The UFC will always air pay-per-views, I'm speaking, in America on a Saturday at 10 o'clock Eastern. Always. While you could provide a couple of examples, while during COVID, there was a couple of start times. I get this, broad stroke. But it has to be that way. And Tom's argument was, hey, that's not right. Like, Americans do a great job and it's an American company, but come check out the fans we have here in Britain. We are massive here. We are massive throughout Europe. So, give us a little respect too, and every now and again, the Americans can watch at an off time. 10 in the morning, 11 in the morning. And these things have been tested a couple of times. So I want to share this with you. This was most recently tested. It was Francis Ngannou versus Tyson Fury, and it was a disaster. No one watched it. And while that fight was uncompelling leading up to it, well, Tyson and Francis did a horrible job of making you guys interested and making anybody believe that Francis could compete as well as it turned out he could. But they did not do a good job of convincing you of that. So I understand that. But as bad as the numbers did, it's more than just that. Well, the more was, it started at 11 a.m. I can personalize this. I, Chael Sonnen, planned to watch that. I, Chael Sonnen, got a text message from Kevin Ioli at 11 a.m. Oregon time, letting me know that the card was already going. Now, Francis wasn't expected in the ring till closer to 1:30 Oregon time, but the event itself had started. I had no idea. I had planned to watch it that evening. I had a group of people. Mark and I were talking about it and where we were going to go to watch. He was out playing a game of golf with Kavika and Cody, and I have to text him, Francis and Tyson is underway. So just use that as a recent example. Now let me take you back a number of years. And the UFC used to play Friday nights. Now, anyone that goes into showbiz plans to hold an event on a Saturday. Everybody plans to do it. And they find out the hard way, as passionate as they are and as excited as they are about their event. It doesn't matter if it's motocross, if it's ping pong, if it's baseball. There's no exception here. They all find out the hard way that the cream rises to the top and they are not going to be able to play a Saturday night. It is simply too competitive and what they are doing is not compelling enough. Fine. Well, the UFC, as they were growing, for strategic reasons, the ones that I just laid out, played Fridays. And it was great. And that is what you would do on a Friday if you were a fight fan. But they were unique. Vince McMahon wasn't playing Fridays. And top boxing events were not playing Friday. So this is when the UFC goes, they go on Friday. That all changed. And as they grew and became big and popular enough, they then started to compete for the coveted time slot of 10 Eastern on a Saturday. Oh, by the way, the UFC won. They took over and other people started moving. Now you get boxing and wrestling on Sundays. They all ran away. But this is still the way that the story happened. So somewhere along that journey, a mega fight of Brock Lesnar versus Alistair Overeem gets booked. The problem is the Saturday of that week was also the 4th of July. And so many people are out and partying and doing other things that the UFC changed and they played Friday. And that was a massive fight at that time. Overeem versus Lesnar was massive. They played Friday. It bombed. And the UFC said, we are never, for any reason, going back to Fridays. Now, once they had established the day of Saturday, somewhere within this, they also realized, man, we can't do 11 a.m. start times and 4 a.m. start times and noon. Here's what we do. We're going to do consistent, which of course they should. Of course. It is a little bit surprising that the UFC had to find this out the hard way. Of course you need to be at the same time. You can't take Jerry Seinfeld from Thursdays at 8 o'clock on NBC and move him to Tuesdays on CBS at 4 and think that the audience is going to come. And believe me, this has been tried. There has been great disasters. You ever follow the news? Go see the contract Katie Couric got. Or Megyn Kelly got. The audience doesn't come. It's not like that. We will tell you what we like. And if you try to dictate it, you're not going to like how it goes. And I'm only sharing with you. It's very important that once it was established, Saturday's 10 o'clock Eastern, that it doesn't go back. And it was for wherever in the world that you were. And it actually made things, from a logistics standpoint, for the personnel of the UFC, much easier. Now there's not all these huge conversations and discussions. And when are we going to do this? And when are we going to do that? You can all look at the same clock and you can do it at all times. And it's going to be the clock in Times Square. Main card, 10 o'clock, back everything off of that. Tom weighed in. And Tom did the right thing. He took the side of the British fans. But it gained a little bit of momentum, almost like it was an online petition to go in and change it. I'm letting you know why that can't be. And a champion like Tom, who for the first time ever in his career will get what's called participation, and he needs a lot of people to tune in and it will change his life, does not want a goofy start time. He does not want you, the Americans, to change your habits or have to accommodate tattooed up uneducated athletes that fight up to 3 times a year. I mean, there it is. Boom. Which side are you going to fall on? Not on that one. So that's the story of the argument. It's also why it's wasted breath and why you're never going to win it. It's also why Francis and boxing on a Saturday at 11 a.m. is not sustainable business. When's the UFC? Saturday, 10 o'clock Eastern. Always, idiot. John Jones and the incident with the drug tester at his house. Now, this has reared its ugly head once again. I must tell you, I thought it was gone. And I thought we had a hand in that. I know you guys did your part online to make sure we clear John and squash this, but it's come back up. And it came back up in the form of, hey, John's always in trouble. Now, can we take a look at that? Because I'm not sure that's what happened. I mean, I have followed the John stuff from day one, and I have championed it, and I have screamed it at any attempt that I have had to enrage or embarrass him in any way. So, I mean, I've seen it from day one, but from day one, the story has been the same, which is John, don't go out. John, don't go out. I mean, that was always it. And then there might even be a caveat to it, which is, John, if you go out, take an Uber. John, if you go out, have the friend drive. John, if you go out, have a chauffeur. But it was always, John, don't go out. Can we agree? Can we agree that's what the story has always been? Okay, well, it seems as though John has listened. I mean, this newest one was at his house. It changes everything. He was where he was supposed to be, doing what he was supposed to be doing with the people he was supposed to be doing it with. Now, he's got an obligation. He's unique and he's in a pool. And everybody in that pool is unique and they have agreed to it. Okay, great. Well, exactly what is that obligation? The number one part of the obligation for the pool that they're in for drug testing is that you become available. Now, along the lines of being available, is you have to be accessible by your phone and or accessible if somebody comes to your property. And the way they're going to do it is they're going to start with coming to the property. And if they can't reach you for some reason in that regard, they will then call you on the phone. Perhaps you're at the store. Perhaps you're headed home. They are reasonable and they will wait for you. And that is the way that this goes. John did all of those things. Now, once they reach you, you need to be accommodating. In a number of very trying situations. And I know a lot of you have been drug tested at work and you don't think anything of it. You think how simple it is. And while this is agreed upon, I'm not changing it all, but I would like for you to at least understand this is not a simple drug test like you would take at work. For example, they're going to take blood. I mean, that in and of itself is a very, very big deal. I have a friend, and you might know someone like this. I have a friend who tried to get life insurance. And this was 18 years ago, and he never got the insurance because they were going to take blood. They came to his house to do it, and he passed out. Now, I know that that's dramatic, but I'm just sharing a personal story that I know, and you likely have heard him too. Like, that's a big deal to give blood for some people, and we can at least at a minimum agree it's intrusive. You're taking somebody from a person, from their body, that you're never going to give back. Pretty interesting concept. Now let's talk about the urine part, right? The urine part must be visible. So in a male's situation, you are presenting your derobed self, and they will watch as that goes into the container that's holding the urine. Now, that is likely nothing more than a bit of an inconvenience, because now you have to pee. If you don't have to pee when they showed up, you will start drinking waters and coffees and Gatorades and Jocko Fuels and anything else that you think might help to get you into that situation. So it's never a time, right? When you get hit with this 24/7, even though we've agreed to it and we're in the pool, when you get hit with that, it's never a time of celebration. Can we agree on that? Can we agree that it's not an exciting phone call? Can we agree on that? Now, these are good people that are doing a great job at their job. There's no part of this that is pointing to somebody being wrong, but that includes John. John was accessible, which is the deal. John must reasonably give access to the blood draw and to the request of urine, of which he's going to present himself to a complete stranger. He must. That's the rules. He did. He did both of those things. Now, it would be nice if he did it in a timely fashion. He did. And what do I mean by that? What do I mean by that? Some people love to mess with the testers. Like they take that as a really good time. And then they will come and tell other athletes what they did to inconvenience these people. And I know people that have just held it, said they didn't have to urinate, and have just held it because it was at dinner time. And they were so mad that these folks came at dinner time that they know they have families and it's dinner time for them too. So I'm just going to keep them here for 2.5 hours. I know people have done that have held it. For example, when the testers see you, you can never leave their sight. Now you can do whatever it is that you want to do. It wouldn't matter if it was taking your kids to school. It wouldn't matter if it was playing cards. It wouldn't matter if it was watching a movie. Nothing matters. You can do anything you want. That includes using the restroom. You will never leave their sight. I know a person specifically who wanted to test this and make them so uncomfortable that he decided he was going to shower. He claimed that he couldn't urinate just to inconvenience them, and then claimed it was shower time and took a shower and made them stand there and watch him. Two total strangers watching him in the shower. He thought this was cool. He thought this was a funny thing. Came and bragged about it to a whole bunch of the rest of us. I'm only sharing with you, John did nothing like that. He as quickly as he could peed. He as quickly as they wanted the vein and could get it, he gave it. He wasn't out. This wasn't the typical narrative of John should stay in. He did. It wasn't the typical narrative of have a friend drive, make sure you're not driving, get an Uber, call a chauffeur. None of those things happened. There was no driving. He was in. He did everything right. Now, there is allegedly a comment that he made. There's allegedly a comment that he made, of which he has not fully denied, but the interpretation of that comment, I think to any reasonable person, would see it John's way. There was never anybody that was in danger. There was never anybody that had a hand raised to them. I don't think a person even had a tone elevated. I got to tell you, I wasn't there. But even without being there, everything that I just stated for you are sides of the story that both sides told. So now you have a little bit room for interpretation. Screw your interpretation. John was at home where he was supposed to be. John gave access to those he was supposed to give access to, and John gave blood and urine to those who came to collect it. We're all done here, and John did not do anything wrong. Guys, when I started podcasting, an online store was the furthest thing on my mind, but now we're selling Bad Guy Ink merchandise. That includes coffee. That includes t-shirts. Go get yourself a sticker if you would like. And you know what? It's very easy. And that's all because we use Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you to sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's where you go to help your business grow. Whether you're auctioning off autographed apparel or selling custom accessories, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person point-of-sale system, whenever and wherever you're selling from, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers and the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I appreciate about Shopify is no matter how big you grow, you don't have to feel overwhelmed by the demand. Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level with ease. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/chale, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/chale right now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/chale. Summer is coming up, and that might mean that you're going to have a little more time on your hands. Why not use it to learn a new language? Rosetta Stone, the most trusted language learning program that truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, is here to help you. Some of you may be traveling abroad this summer, and you might want to experience that country beyond just the touristy type spots. Your experience could be upgraded just by learning the native language. Now you can download the Rosetta Stone app to your phone or tablet and learn on the go while driving, riding on the subway, running on a treadmill, or even laying poolside with just a 10-minute lesson per day. Rosetta Stone's lessons are designed for long-term retention of language skills rather than short-term memorization. The focus of the program is preparing you for real, authentic conversations, not just knowing a couple of translations. It's like having your own personal trainer for language learning. Rosetta Stone has been used by millions of people for over 3 decades. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a limited time, my listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off. Unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. That's a steal. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. As spring makes its way into summer, there will be more outdoor festivals and concerts happening all around us. And if you're in the market for some new attire, let Tecovas help you out. A great pair of Western boots will elevate a casual look or add a refined flair that'll draw both eyes and compliments. I've seen some youngsters out there pull off wearing a nice pair of Tecovas ostrich boots with shorts. I've worn mine to a UFC event with a full suit head to toe. There is no limit to how you can wear a pair of boots, and the best way to shop for boots is at your local Tecovas store, where you're going to be greeted by the smell of fresh leather and a friendly smile. Go on in, grab a cold one, get fitted by a pro, and shop the latest styles. Tecovas also offers custom branding and leather stamping if you want to personalize your boots or fine leather goods. Visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas, TECOVAS.com. And don't go gently, y'all. My official prediction for Lionheart versus Pacino, I am taking Anthony Smith. Now, do I have a biasness towards Smith? Sure, I do. Sure, I do. I can see beyond those, though. I know so much about Smith that I could tell you his age. I could tell you how he's training. I could tell you what he weighs today. But It is because of my relationship with Anthony that I feel so confident that he's prepared for this fight. Listen, Anthony Smith is in one of these extremely sensitive and uncoveted positions that happens to fighters all the time on accident. Like they never look to be here. Anthony Smith could lose this coming fight and lose his future positionings to be on television. Like he's not in contract of or in jeopardy of losing his contract or his opportunity, but he could lose TV time. He could come down the card. And I only mention that because Anthony Smith is this close to fighting for a title on any given day. There is few people whose names come out of Alex Pereira's mouth more than Anthony Smith. There was even a confusion done there where Anthony didn't know how to get a hold of Pereira. I'm going back in time a little bit, but he didn't know how to get a hold of Pereira, but Pereira was calling him out so strongly that Anthony did know how to get a hold of Glover. And Anthony contacted Glover like, hey man, is there something going on here? And Glover didn't really know what it was about. I'm just saying like that was never put to bed. And the only reason I'm telling you that story, Pereira brings up Lionheart a lot. And I don't totally know what that's about. Now, from a stylistic matchup standpoint, like you might push back and tell me, hey, we're not going to see Lionheart fighting for a title against Pereira. Okay, great. Let me give you a different scenario. Pereira is no longer champion. Like, just imagine that, if you will. Imagine that Pereira had dropped the title to Jamal. Just imagine that. And then I came to you and told you it's going to be Anthony Smith versus Pereira. You would be excited and you wouldn't resist that in the least. Okay, great. Well, what's the difference? The only difference there was one fight. Right? He did beat Jamal. Pereira did. He is still the champion. Well, but one fight later, I got you to see where Anthony versus Pereira makes sense. So I'm just doing that same thing now. Anthony goes out. He has a great fight. All of a sudden, he's in the conversation with Pereira, who, by the way, has conversations currently non-existent. And when they do come up, they involve Uncle Liev, which is going to be a conversation that is non-existent. Now, I'll give you a quick story on Anthony. Anthony was out at the PI. We're doing UFC 300 together. And he looks good. Like, every time I see him, I ask him to say, hey, how big are you? Hey, what do you want? Come up. I grab you. I feel his arms and whatnot. And he's a very big guy. Anthony could walk around on vacation at 238. No problem. And he was looking lean. He was looking very fit. He weighed 220 pounds. And when it came time for us to order food, he ordered food that was neither high in nutrition, low in carbohydrates, or low in calorie density. And I just said to him, I said, hey, are you, this isn't affecting you yet? He said, chill, I haven't been on a diet at all. I've been eating anything that I want. That's very relevant, right? Because losing weight or gaining weight is calories in to calories out. And he's able to eat what he wants, and it speaks to the high level of training that he must be doing. So I'm just gathering some of these clues. I'm just kind of picking up some things that he's setting down along the way. And in my heart and in my mind, I know he's got a fight 3 weeks away, and that's what it was, from UFC 300 that I'm discussing to 301. There was only 3 weeks separated. And being a veteran like he is, to take on a gentleman who's only four fights into his UFC career, coming through the Dana White Contender Series, oh, by the way, if you look a little bit closer, is completely undefeated. Young guys like that are getting matched up with veterans for a reason, and it's not to serve the veteran. Now, Anthony, backing up to 300. Slips off, he's going to go over to the PI. He goes to the PI, he's getting a workout in. While he's in the PI getting his workout in, Jamal Hill, who was about to be the main event for the world title, calls him over, and all of a sudden a sparring session opens up. And it doesn't end for 25 minutes. They end up doing five-minute rounds, which, by the way, is like the new thing. Guys are doing that now. It used to be on fight week, you did not spar, but you didn't even consider it. I don't know that I have personally witnessed. Once guys travel, so once they travel to the location, now they're living in the hotel and situation. I don't know that I've ever witnessed sparring of any degree, whether it's going to be 1 minute rounds, 2 minute rounds, 3 minutes, just something light but more protected. I don't know that I've ever seen it. I'm not positive I have seen live grappling at that point, because if you butt heads, you catch an elbow, you do anything that causes a cut, the fight is off, which means you're not getting paid. Not only will you be blamed and heckled around the world for costing an event and an event to yourself, whoever did it to you isn't going to be looked at very fondly either. Like, if you get a cut that costs you a fight, the organization is going to want to know, who were you going with? I mean, I'm just sharing with you. Guys are doing it all the time now. 2 weeks before, Paulo Costa allowed me access to come in and watch him getting ready. That would have been 5 weeks before. As he was getting ready for Whitaker, and this was on fight week. This is the Tuesday of fight week. So you got Tuesday, you got Friday's the weigh, and Saturday's the fight. On Tuesday, Paulo Costa sparred hard 3 5-minute rounds. And then I tell you that story because all of a sudden, Anthony does it with Jamal. But Anthony tells me that as soon as they got done, Max Holloway and his partner went out with the little gloves and went to war for 5 fives. I've just never heard anything like it. I'm merely sharing with you guys. When one thing happens in our sport that finds success, then it happens to our entire sport. And it wouldn't matter if a guy was going on a diet. I can remember the alkaline diet. Dr. Ryan Parsons and champion Randy Couture helped to make this thing famous. Eating a lot of spinach and things like this. I'm going way back though, guys. I'm going back to 2001. These are just things that I remember. And then we used to spar every single day. When I would show up to practice every single day, we would ask each other one question. And I could name drop for you. This is Evan Tanner and Randy Couture, the late, great Evan, by the way, the late and even equally as great Robert Follis, Matt Lindland, Ed Herman, myself, Dan Henderson, Randy Couture. Did I say that? We would ask the same question every single day. Big gloves or little gloves? It would then be a popularity vote. We look around and whoever wanted big gloves, we put on big gloves. Wouldn't matter if we'd done that the day before or the previous 5 days. It was purely majority rules. Whether we were going to go big gloves, little gloves, we would set a clock. Every 5 minutes it would sound, and we would go spar. That was it. That was all that we did. Then that changed over time. And I remember when it happened, and it went down to twice a week. And this was right around 2015, and I hated it. I did not believe in it at all. I did not believe that that was enough. One day little gloves, one day big gloves. And I'm like, that is not going to work. And it stayed. It stayed from 2015. That's still what they do now. And you'll even hear of some gyms where they only do it one time a week. But now we're finding guys, Jamal Hill, who I name dropped for you, Paulo Costa, who I mentioned for you, Max Holloway, feature big name fights that were not on weight. They still had to cut weight. They still had to do media. And they went the full duration. In Paulo's case, that was 3 rounds. In Jamal and Max's case, that was 5 rounds. Guys, I'm not telling you something here. I'm just telling you something new. There was times in our sport that guys would not wear headgear in practice. They were teased, in fact. You were teased if you wore headgear in practice. Like, the sport is going into different spots. I can't imagine that this one stays. I also don't know the science behind it, at least in theory. What is the science behind 5 fives at full pace, after you've traveled, and while you're malnourished and dehydrated because you still got to beat the scale in front of you? And I'm going to get back to you when I find out. I'm going to get back to you when I find out what it is. But I'm going to use that scenario in that situation nonetheless, because that was the last fight Anthony Smith had. It's not what you guys think it was. The last fight that he had was at the PI that day, and it was against the best in the world. Right? He's against the best guy in the world. And you never tell gym stories, and it wouldn't be right for me to share, but I heard Anthony speak on this. And Anthony did not mind saying that he did not win that day against the best in the world. But Anthony Smith was also doing 5 fives that were unexpected in this match. He's only in for 3 fives. And he's got the younger guy who's unblemished and came to the Contender Series. And even before that, nobody had ever gotten over on him. I understand the whole thing, but if you're asking me for a prediction, I'm rolling with Lionheart. Martinez versus Aldo, my final prediction. Guys, I'm going with Aldo. Look, oh boy. Oh, but you can't go with the guy fighting his last match of the contract. You just can't. You can't pick a guy on a return. You can't pick an athlete whose focus has been in a different sport. You can't. Oh, and by the way, like anything in life, follow the baseball rules. If there's three strikes, get it out of here. At anything in life, if you find three strikes, move on. And I just listed three strikes, and I'm taking Jose. Why? Well, I believe that Jose Aldo was the greatest fighter in the world the night he relinquished the title to Conor McGregor. I believe between those two skills that were contested that night, even if it was in 13 seconds, that Jose was the better physical fighter. I believe that Conor McGregor created something, and whether that was doubt or disbelief or pressure or a nuisance or an annoyance, I don't believe from a mental standpoint that that was the same Jose Aldo. I believe that it affected him. If I am right on that, then I would be very right in telling you that from a mental headspace position, Jose is in a great spot. Because this was unknown. This was unexpected. This is not an opponent that he sat and studied. Martinez has not come out and gotten under Jose's skin. This hasn't captivated the media. There wasn't a big tour on it. This isn't headlines anywhere. And I think that's a place that Martinez would like to be. I think that Martinez, much like Jose Aldo, if he were telling the truth, would agree with everything that I just said. I believe if Martinez, while under oath, I believe he would also back up what I just said. In fact, there was a media chest-to-chest separation needed between these two athletes. You don't get that from Jose Aldo. You don't get that ever from Jose Aldo. Conor McGregor couldn't get that. Chad Mendes couldn't get that from Jose Aldo. But Martinez did. And I don't think that Martinez got it. I think Martinez forced it. And I think Martinez forced it because it was his last-ditch effort. And he has also seen evidence of having good success by getting between the ears of Aldo. The clock's ticking, and he wasn't there yet. I think that those things greatly favor Aldo. And when guys go to a different sport like boxing, and when we have seen time and time again that the skills of boxing are not a good translation to MMA, boy, the grind is. And boy, that two-a-day workouts is. And boy, those extra runs that you got to get in because you expect the conditioning is. And where did Jose Aldo do it? Was he like everybody else that had to pack up and leave? Had to go find Teddy Atlas or go find Freddie Roach? Had the right answers out in Colorado Springs with the Olympic team. Is that what he did? No, he stayed in the same gym, which, by the way, isn't a boxing gym. It's an MMA gym. They just happen to do boxing. Big difference. Jose stayed with the same workout partners. He stayed with the same trainer who knows him better than anybody, Andre Pettinaris. So to convince me that Jose Aldo left the sport, to convince me that Jose didn't have a vision and a fantasy and practice and wasn't getting rounds in, it's going to be a hard thing to do. But you could do it if the weight class was 155. You could do it if the weight class was 145. But calories in to calories out, which represent what a person weighs more than anything else. And here's Jose Aldo, where he's done his finest work, where he's made his title runs. Not having somebody in his head, not having the great pressures of it, having the support of the crowd in Brazil, there's just a lot. Yeah, I can find three strikes against Aldo. Sure I can. But I can find five strikes against Martinez, and I just did. The great hex and the great curse from Chael P. I'm picking Jose Aldo. this. I'm going to go with Pantoja. But there's a big but. There's a big but. There is no such thing as a home field advantage in fighting. There isn't football. There isn't baseball. There isn't basketball. I mean, there is such a real advantage to fighting at home that there is massive debates when the finals and or championship games roll around about how and where we're going to do it to keep things as even as we possibly can. Like, you could go back to 1904 and you will not find a home country for the Olympics. It's Olympic year, so I'm working the Olympics in, but you won't find a home nation to host the games that did not have their personal medal record when it was at home. You just won't find it. So that's pretty empirical evidence. I get the politics and their bureaucracy, but hear me out. Hear me out nonetheless, because those are also at play in a fist fight. So why is it that a fist fight isn't an advantage? Well, when you go around telling everybody in your neighborhood how tough you are, right? I'm like, you don't just have the world looking at you. It starts in a smaller place. You told everybody on your street you were the baddest dude, and somehow, some way, you proved it. And then you got to move out to another couple of streets, and that turns into a city. Once you're the toughest in the city, that goes and gets tested in the state. And then that turns into the region, which turns into the nation, which might land you in the octagon. I'm just sharing for you. There's a lot on that. You go around and all the people that showed you a certain attitude and respect for whatever reason that you got, it is now you deserved it or you didn't. There's a lot on that. And when you're doing truly international business, you're going to have three different locations. You're going to have the gentleman who's the A side representing Australia, New Zealand, tight demographic. There's where Ursa comes in. And then you get Pantoja. It's representing all of Brazil, which is the nation that historically has done better than any other nation in the sport. Oh, by the way, Pantoja did a lot of his training in South Florida, United States. So the problem with Ursic, if you're going to face him, I apologize, with Pantoja, I have never seen somebody that can scramble like this. I have seen Kyle Dake scramble. I have seen David Taylor scramble. I've never seen anybody that can scramble as well as Pantoja. I've seen Craig Jones scramble. I've seen Gordon Ryan scramble. I mean, I got to tell you this. It takes a level of cardio that you simply can't do it. Like, to watch a good scramble is amazing. But the reason you don't see a good scramble followed by another good scramble followed by another good scramble, they don't have the energy to do it. At some point, they got to take a breath. At some point, they got to recharge those batteries. And I just never quite seen anything like Pantoja. I mean, it's to the point that I believe there is something scientific going on there. There are people that have argued that Lance Armstrong has a mutant lung. There are people that have argued, like Lance and his team supported this, whether they put it out as a story or it was reality, but that if you actually went in and did an X-ray of Lance's lung, it was a third larger than the average human being's, which was to explain that VO2 max and explain what he could do so well from a cardio standpoint. And I just submit for you, there is something going on with Pantoja. I do not believe an athlete can train and get to that level. I don't believe if you build your base with 10-mile run at a slow pace, and then you get up to where you're doing sprints, and you're on the aerodyne, and you're finished now, and you go to practice every day, and you're the most disciplined guy, and you're eating healthy, and you're sleeping on time. I don't believe a human being can get to the level of conditioning that Pantoja is at. It's rare. It's this magic wand, right? Your DNA. A gift from above. And that's just a really hard thing to have to deal with. The one thing, when you have a guy that is more likely than not to win a decision, and that's exactly what the cardio is. If you're one of these cardio hounds, the longer you can extend the fight, and you get into the deep waters, and all these terms that make you want to gag with a smurf, they become very true. But that guy, nonetheless, still has an off button, and Ursic has the power to find it. So, like, if you're handicapping these things and you're going over to DraftKings, This is one of those fights where if you wanted old Chael's opinion, you don't have to agree with me that Pantoja's going to win. You could think it's going to be Usyk, but I wouldn't be encouraging that anyway. I would encourage you to look a little bit closer, because if you think Pantoja is going to win, I think that you think it's going to go all five rounds. And if you think that Usyk is going to win, I don't think, for those of you taking Usyk, that you believe it is going to go all five rounds. You believe Usyk can stop him. And moreover, you believe he can knock him out. Am I right? Guys, am I right? Did any of you picture, close your eyes and try to picture us and think that Usyk was going to win a decision in Brazil against Pantoja? Did any of you think that? Truthfully, be fair with me. Okay, great. Did any of you that were still taking Usyk to win, did you believe he was going to submit him? No, you didn't. So you believe that Usyk was going to knock him out. And I am with you. That if Usyk is going to win, that is how he's going to win. So, but now that we get that established, now you just got to come round 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Right? And I would encourage you to really consider that. If you think that Usyk is going to win, and you don't think it's going to be a decision, actually say that. Oh, by the way, if you don't think it's going to be a submission, actually say that. That leaves you at knockout. Now you just got to pick the round. It's an interesting match. I'm staying out of it. I'm sponsored by DraftKings. I tell you that I'm staying out of it myself. But I do not believe that you believe that Usyk is going to win by any other means than a KO. After years of fine print contract and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if I have learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, I thought, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all made sense. Guys, there isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They don't have retail stores or salespeople. Instead, they deliver premium phone plans directly to you. I honestly thought the plans and pricing were too good to be true. I'm thankful I was wrong. The coverage and reliability with Mint Mobile has been superb. Say bye-bye to overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/Chael. That's mintmobile.com/Chael. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Chael. $45 up front. Payment required equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. I recently started taking Morning Kick, used and created by former karate champion Chuck Norris. Guys, I've never felt better. By the way, have you seen Chuck lately? It's like he's aging backwards. This guy is still throwing kicks. He's full of energy, and he's in his 80s. This is why I jumped at the shot of taking his revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions. This drink combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other greens out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade, and it has hundreds of 5-star reviews. And by the way, I never tell you something tastes a certain way if it doesn't. It tastes just like strawberry lemonade. Since I started drinking Morning Kick, my digestion is smoother. My body looks leaner. I have energy all day. I just feel sharp. I want you to go to roundhouseprovisions.com/Chael. Now, that's going to save you up to 44% off the regular priced order. Plus, Every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost in energy, and just an overall healthier body, go to roundhouseprovisions.com/chael today.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Ilya Topuria has responded to Joe Rogan. Now, the story goes like this. Joe Rogan had made a comment that Topuria, as champion, wants to be able to call some own his own shots, and that he had turned down a fight in Perth against Volkanovski. Now, that's all. It stops right there. But Topuria did want to correct that just by letting Joe know, hey, I never turned that fight down. I was never offered it. And Topuria made it sound as though that wouldn't be what I'd be most interested in, but we'd never gotten to that point because I was never offered it. All right, now hard stop right there. I just wanted to bring that up because George Masvidal never defended the BMF title. And George Masvidal to this day doesn't know why. He thinks he knows why. He was told an answer why, and he gobbled it right up, but he does not know why. Now, I'm not going to connect all those dots for you. I'm going to dangle this because I've done this for well over a year, and you guys keep begging in the office. It's just right in front of you, but I'm just not going to tie it in. You're going to have to do it, but let me tell you another scenario. And as a clue, I'm reminding you that George Masvidal never got to defend that belt. Now, Topuria is willing to fight Max, for sure, no problem. Not just because you guys want it, not just because the rankings suggest it, not just because Max is the only person out there to call Topuria out. He's willing to do it, the end. It becomes, if we're going to do it at 145 pounds, of which I am king, then my belt goes up, and I am not willing to do that against you who has a belt. Unless you take the same risk and you put your belt up. Now, I know this sounds like old hat to you. I know that it does. But the new part that you haven't heard anywhere else, if we actually got to that situation, if we actually got to the spot where the UFC said, you're fighting for Topuria's belt, or you're fighting for Holloway's belt, right, we're going to do it 145 for Topuria's belt. We're going to move this up to 155. Featherweight is secured. You two are fighting. By the way, Max, you're putting the strap up. Both guys are going to have an absolute fit once their managers explain to them what the difference is. So right now, where they're both acting like, I'm not going to take the risk, I got something that you want, when it comes to fight time, they're going to want to be defending that belt. The big thing that went Masvidal right over his head, to this day, doesn't get it. So what would you do in that kind of a spot, right? I mean, let's say you're Max, and let's say that you come forward and say, yes, Ilya, I agree to those terms. I'll see you at 45. I never had a beef with you, but I sure as heck wanted my belt back. Now all of a sudden I do have a beef with you, so now I can get my belt back and handle business with you. And then Max looks around and goes, hey, wait a minute, my belt's not up? Boy, that's a big difference. Why is my belt not up? He's going to be begging to put his belt up, right? But this is where the irony of this comes. And it's the same thing with Topuria. oh, we'll go do this at 150 pounds. We're going to do it for your belt, Max. When that time comes, he's going to go, wait a minute, I'm not putting my belt up. I want to put my belt up. Let's only, I mean, put my belt up. It's like, well, guys, do you understand why we don't have you make the fights? I mean, if you want to do it that way and you want to tell me that you're the champion and you've got all this pull and you're let's do it your way. And elbow and a wink, I'm going to protect you no matter what happens. You keep that title. Boy, that's going to feel pretty good, isn't it, for about 5 minutes until you realize what it is you just agreed to. When I'm looking at Topuria versus Max, I love this, and I love where it's going. I love the idea and the concept that either of them would have the ability to call these shots. And there is nothing wrong with attempting to do just that. There is nothing wrong with having a story that is so good that it gets picked up by a publisher. Right? There's nothing wrong with writing a script so well that one of the big production houses want to turn it into a movie. But there is so much more around it. Why has nobody called out Max for the belt? Why has nobody publicly called out Max? I would have covered it. I would have talked about it over here. It would have gotten that person some headlines. A lot of the dirt sheets come listen to what I have to say and then go write a story about it. Right? But this is the trickle-down effect. This is how these things are done. I'm not going to come out ever while Max is going at it with Topuria and have an alternative idea for Max. That would make no sense. Right? Like, I'm not going to go, imagine this scenario. Well, you know, I know Max is going after Topuria, but you know what I think? I think Artem Sakarian, after what he proved against Charles Olive, I think it should be Sakarian versus Holloway. I don't think you even have to worry about the title shot. In fact, I heard that Islam is going to fight with Dustin, and we don't want to have two and three deep in number one contendership. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make a match, and it's a great match, and everybody's going to cheer. Everybody's going to say, hey, I really like that idea. I would love to see Sakarian versus Max. I had never thought of it, and the BMF title is up. This sure solves a lot of problems. And that was an extremely plausible idea to have had. But they didn't go in that direction, did they? Max went after Topuria. Nobody went after Max. We have never had a fight as talked about and celebrated after the fight, aside from Bonner Griffin Part 1. We have never had a fight that has been so talked about as we have Max versus Justin Gaethje, but there has never been even a whisper of a rematch of Max versus Justin Gaethje. Now, I don't suggest for you that we go and do one, and I don't suggest for you we didn't get all of our questions answered, and while being a great fight, it was not overly a close fight. Like, I do understand all of those concepts. I just want you to concede back to me. We've never been in a spot like this where the idea, the notion, even if it was swatted away, the notion and suggestion of rematching them hasn't happened. And then when we go down and we look at Ilia Topuria, I continue to hear an assertion by Brian Ortega, but I haven't seen it by Brian. And if I miss that, guys, I'm a Brian Ortega fan, and I don't feel as though he does things that get past me, but did I miss this one? Because I have not heard anybody call out Topuria except Sean O'Malley. And Sean O'Malley, not for nothing, did it at the time that his next opponent was sitting in the front row, and he did it just to piss off Merab. O'Malley, like the great genius he is, was planting a seed to be harvested way down the line. In that exact moment, he was just trying to piss off Merab. And I haven't heard anybody else calling out Topuria. Why is that? Are you just all accepting that it's Max's? And I haven't heard anybody calling out Max. And why is that? Are you just accepting? I mean, we have a situation where Artem Sakarian, who is in very high demand right now, allegedly was offered a title fight against Islam, who he'd already fought, who was not the match Islam wanted. All Islam has ever asked for is give me some fresh blood. That's a pretty small request, but apparently we were going to ignore Islam's request anyway, and we were going to have him do a rematch which most of the audience never knew happened, so it would feel like a new match to them, but we're going to have him do that against Artem Sakarian. It did not happen. Insert Dustin Poirier. Okay, we're going to do Dustin Poirier versus Islam. We just are. Just stop asking me why. We just are. You got it? Yeah, okay, I got it. Great. But we could still give Artem a title shot, couldn't we? Because it turns out there's a second title at that same weight class. And this way we don't have to wait. And this way we don't have to have a logjam. And this way we could get some really good clarity to draw into the winner of Islam versus Dustin. All we got to do is put Max and Artem together. But nobody even considered it. That headline is out there nowhere. Nobody's talked about it. Ever. And that might be out of respect. It might be. They just doggone it. You like Max too much to call him out. Justin Gaethje couldn't build that fight. Right? As great as Max versus Justin was, it wasn't the main event that night. That night leading into it, it was not the main event. Son of a bitch, it wasn't even a co-main event. And that speaks to your ability prior to the contest, right? Prior to the contest, those things have to be done for your placement on the card. But of course they won the day. And of course it was the people's main event. Of course that's the one that the people remember the most. And there's Ilia Topuria with nobody calling him out. Doing everything right. Topuria's doing everything right. There's Max Holloway with nobody calling him out. Max is doing everything right. Everything that these guys are doing a perfect job. It's all those around them that keep on getting this one wrong. Islam was weighing in on 155 pounds. I wish Islam would do more of this, by the way. There's a segment that Anik and Florian do. I can't remember what it was called, but it was a weekly talk with Ray Longo. Every week, they do their whole show. Coach Longo would call in, hit it, boom, he's out. And I loved it. It was this great piece. I wish somebody would do that with Islam. That's it. Like, Bilal Muhammad is very busy with podcasting, or O'Malley, right? Like, somebody that's consistent and is out there, I wish they would do a weekly piece with Islam. You come up with what you're going to call it, weekly take with Islam. I think he's very good. I think he is very clever. I think he is secretly humorous and charismatic. But it's a slippery slope with the ideology of many people from that team, where they are competitors first. They understand that entertainment is important, but there is such a gap between competitor first that comes with sportsmanship and honor, just like they're teaching the younger boys that want to be like them. Then there's a gap to the next, and Islam weighed in. I'm just explaining to you why you don't hear a lot of these things from Islam, but every time he speaks, it's something interesting. For example, what he said this morning, that the ideal opponent that he wanted is Justin Gaethje, but Justin just lost, and the only one left is Poirier, so that's who they're going to fight next. And Poirier has an obvious deficit in his game, and that's with his grappling, so that's what they're going to exploit. Wow, there's a lot on that. First off, your ideal opponent is Justin Gaethje. How come? Nobody wants to fight Justin Gaethje. Max Holloway just fought Justin Gaethje. Max never called for that fight. Prior to that, Poirier fought Justin Gaethje. Poirier didn't call for the fight. Gaethje did, just to remind you. Nobody ever says that they want to fight Justin Gaethje. Many people do it because they get phone calls and offered, and that's the way the wind has decided to blow, but nobody asks for it. So when he says, I'm talking Islam here, that Gaethje is there, meaning the team's ideal opponent, I would like to know why. I think you would as well. What do you see? Why him? What did he do? Is this personal? Share with me. He then said that Dustin Poirier has an obvious deficit in his game. Do you agree with that? He went on to say that it's the grappling, but without me telling you what he said it was, would you co-sign the statement Dustin Poirier has an obvious deficit in his game? Will you co-sign that statement in any regard? I don't think you will. I don't think that you do agree with that. So if they're going to fight And the reason they're going to fight to further Islam's thought is because Sirkarian, who many of you say is the one that should get this, has refused the fight, of which is true. Sirkarian backed it up and said he didn't want to do it. But I'm just wondering, what do you do then? Like, there was a problem that came about in 2023 that if Chael had one wish going into the new year, we would find a way to not do what we did throughout 2023, which was we had multiple number one contenders at the same time. I Chael the fan, did not like that. I Chael the fan, love when a couple, three guys, four guys, if we're really lucky, see the writing on the wall and understand that from a logical standpoint, they could be the number one contender, but so could him and him. So now we're going to fight in the media. I like that. I think that's fun. I need clicks over here for what I do. I'm a little talking head, just saying words into a microphone, hoping that you guys will watch. But I need topics. And it becomes very easy to have topics when you have multiple guys fighting for the same thing that are never going to throw a punch. They're going to do it through the media. They're going to do it through calculating. They're going to do it through strategies. They're going to do clips and social media. They're going to make a video here and there. And these other guys are going to have a manager send out a text from here and there. Like, whatever it is that they can do, they're going to bring that best foot forward. I like that. And we take that away. We denut the ability to fight for and or need to fight for number one contendership. We take it away when we have two in line already. And we did that three different times in 2023. We had only done it one time throughout history. And then in 2023, we did it three times. In fact, the one time through history that we did it, was it something called UFC 246, where Francis Ngannou knocked out Rozenstruik? Dana went to the press conference and said, Francis is next for the heavyweight championship. And the reason that was different is because Stipe and Cormier was already signed. So now you've got Francis sitting right here. He's got to wait till these guys are done. Wait for the injury reports. Wait for the healing process. Go through the bout agreements, the training camp, the build. And oh, by the way, the 6 months that that took, which was, I think, ended up being seven, nobody else in that division called for number one contendership or called out somebody to fight for number one contendership. There was no reason to. The nuts had been chopped off the entire argument when this was already stated. So in this case, I don't think that there is a reasonable argument where Aram Sarukyan doesn't get that opportunity when he heals up. I just don't think that anybody else is there that has done a good enough job. I don't think Gaethje and Gamrot are clever enough to work it out and find their way to each other to even make an argument. I don't think Max Holloway was clever enough to stay in that fight just to leverage it against what he wanted at 145. So, in that vein, we likely are to have Sirkarian. And if we do that knowing that Poirier is next, but knowing that Gaethje is the one that wanted, and we're going to honor this system, we're going to honor the system that is right there in front of us, and we have to honor it because nobody else is fighting for it, nobody else is even coming for it. Right, it's like any job, if one person shows up for the interview and no one else shows up, even if you don't want this person, you're hoping this guy would apply, but this guy didn't apply, this guy gets the job, right? I mean, it's not like some kind of rocket science. But I can't be my usual dick of a self and come in and scold the 155-pound division. I can't do that. If we're going to have a number one contender who's allowed to wait because we've got the title match that is still to come, and now we've taken up the entire calendar year of 2024, that wasn't just the boys being inept that found a way to sandhag their own division. The balls were chopped off the idea of fighting for a number one contender because you already got two. Floyd Floyd Mayweather. Now, if you follow old JLP on social media, you saw that I reached out to Tank Davis because I didn't want to get worked here. But Tank brought to us, it would now be 4 days ago, we might even be on day five, that Floyd Mayweather is being held in Dubai. So, possible angle, like Floyd is a very good troll on social media. Floyd has slipped into malls before where there's like nobody behind him and taking out his camera. Then he whispers really low so that all the people can't hear him and proclaim to you guys that he has shut down and rented out the entire mall. And then he like turns the camera off really fast because he has it. But then you guys have bought it, right? Like Floyd's a dumb dumb, but dumb dumbs, then they'll bring in alike people. Which is, man, if you're a Floyd fan, good chance you're a dumb dumb. I don't say that to tease you. I say that to let you know that when Tank Davis comes out and tells the world that Floyd is being held in Dubai, you never know what's real. So Boxing Kingdom then reported this. Now, while they are massive, they are the National Enquirer of online boxing news. They don't use a name and or a face because they're idiots. You can't trust anything they say. Doesn't mean it's not interesting. All right, so now I got a couple of sources. They both suck. I got Tank Davis and I got Boxing Kingdom. And when I reached out to Tank to help to get Floyd out and Tank didn't respond, it leads you to think, okay, well, then this is fake and he didn't want to piss off old Chael. And I appreciate that. But I looked into it again and again, and it appears that Floyd is being held in Dubai. Now, I just gave you a minute and 45 second disclaimer because I'm well aware that this could all explode in our face and Floyd is sitting at home in his rented McMansion hoping a camera crew is going to come by. But I do personally believe and feel comfortable in letting you know that Floyd is being held in Dubai. He's being held for debt. He did not pay a debt. That story has then been pulled in a couple of different directions, but the current one going around goes something like this. Floyd held an event in Dubai. Floyd did not pay the athletes. In Dubai, they do not take debt as a forgiving measure. In the United States, they do. You have no such thing as a guarantee in the United States. You have a word of guarantee that is only as good as the person who said the word. Like, there's not a scenario in America where you will be arrested for not paying your bills. That might not be great. And most of you didn't even know that, right? Now, like some of you, I just made bad people. You're going to quit paying your bills. Go, well, chill. Let me know. I'll never be arrested for it. Well, yeah, you won't. It's true. Not here, but over there, different deal. You're going to be a man of honor? That only goes so far. If you don't have honor, we will make you follow through. And I don't remember Floyd putting on a show over there. I don't remember Floyd putting on an event. It's very hard because the money team is not real. That's not real. Francis Ngannou has a promotional team. Those aren't real. There's just people that will really let you tag into the back end because they're locked into an old school boxing business model and you got to have the tax identification number. I'm simply bringing that to you. Like, McGregor Sports and Entertainment, as cool as that might sound, is not real. And I'm not looking to go down this road. I'm just looking to share with you that to find out that Floyd held an event under the money team in Dubai is big news to me. I don't remember that. So now the question is, how did he not pay and why did he not pay? And that can be a very explainable slope that you're on. For example, you might remember Logan Paul coming out publicly and telling the world Floyd never paid him for their match. But Floyd came out and said, hey, hold on there, newbie. You've never done one of these. And there is something in pay-per-view that is known as the drip. Nobody gets around the drip. You can't get around it. Well, except for one guy. Conor McGregor doesn't have the drip. Now, I'll share with you. The way the story goes is that they paid Floyd to put on the event. And that would make sense. When you're not a real company, right? When I come out and tell you the money team's not real, they're not real in the aspect that you would think of. They don't have distribution. They don't have a bank account. You'll meet people all the time that want to be in business. Business means you sign the front of the check. If you sign the front of the check, you're in business. If you don't sign the front of the check, you are not in business. Really quite simple. So when I tell you the money team isn't real, like they don't have those abilities. They don't have bank accounts. They don't have funding. They don't have things that are coming in and out. They're not getting royalties on distributions that they did, sponsorships and keeping their head above water. They're not real. So to find out that they did an event would stun me because they're not real. Oh, well, wait a second. When you read the fine print, and this is very in line with how business gets done in that part of the world, is they were paid by the sports authority of the geographical location, in this case, Dubai, that brought them in. They then did what's called conversion, where you took this money that was supposed to go in this direction and you converted it to your own. That is a crime in several different countries. So this is what Floyd is being accused of. I don't mean to laugh on that scenario. This is very serious stuff. And if Floyd did not do that, I wouldn't want him to be held. And if the number is $18 million that he was paid that was supposed to go this way, but the money team converted that money, right? I mean, money laundering has always been easiest to do through fighting. It is one of the reasons that it was one of the many pieces of corruption that was meant to be stopped when the government decided to oversee combat. So when I tell you the money team isn't real, like this isn't just me giving a hard time. Floyd got told it's real. He doesn't know. He does not know. And he loaned his name to somebody. And I happened to actually be at the Nevada State Athletic Commission the day they licensed Floyd as a promoter. And I remember as a licensed promoter thinking, don't do that, Floyd. You don't know what you're doing, and you could lend and license your name and your image. Like whoever this is that has convinced you, you need to be the promoter of record. You could license your name and image to that person, but make their name actually be on the dotted line. Like I was sat there in the room, and you should have seen Marnell. Marnell's up there. He wanted to meet Floyd so bad. And I remember watching that happen and thinking, Floyd, you don't know what it means to be a promoter. You don't know what a promoter does. Somebody got you to put your name on this that never explained to you your image and name could still be on it. They got you to actually sign it. And I know you don't know what you're doing. There's no part of me that thinks that Floyd knew that the Sports Authority of Dubai gave $18 million to the money team that was supposed to go to fighters and ended up being converted to something else. There's no part of me that believes he knew that. But that's the significant difference when you loan your image and likeness to somebody or you put your name on the dotted line. I was in the courtroom the day they approved him and he put his name on the line. So now Floyd's being held in Dubai and he's trying to scramble and he's trying to come up with $18 million to get this paid back, to get the athletes paid. But that's the thing about conversion. When the money gets converted, whether it was to you a period of time ago and you went and blew it and he certainly got those habits, or they converted it to somebody else and you never even knew that it was existed and you thought that these guys got paid because the person that got you to put your name on the line is a known con man and a liar anyway, like you're in a really tough spot. You're in a very, very tough spot to come up with $18 million. And while Floyd's net worth is grossly exaggerated, he could come up with $18 million. He could, through collateral, he could leverage and come up with the finances of $18 million. But if he's held in Dubai, and he's not in Nevada to do that, it makes for a very tricky situation. That's the update on Floyd. Now, I do want to tell you that what I just told you is this is the story. This is what's going around on Floyd. How much of that is spot on accurate? We're going to need a little bit of time to tell. We have some very bad sources. We have very, very bad sources. We have Tank, and we have Boxing Kingdom, and we have other guys that report on boxing. Like, it's there. These are not great sources, but I do believe, to an extent, at least the theme is true. I do believe that Floyd is being held on day 5 in Dubai. And I'll leave you with one final thought. When the government holds somebody, that means they've been imprisoned, right? Saying imprisoned or saying the government held you is their hand in hand. Synonymous terms. Not now. He is not. Floyd is not in handcuffs and he's not behind bars. He's just being held. He's just, the passport's being held. He's not able to board that flight and leave. And he's not going to be able to until he comes with the money, which is rumored at $18 million. That part of all of this, I'm comfortable telling you, is accurate. So you at least have the theme. And for that, from me, and no thanks to Tank, you're welcome. All right, everybody, that is it for today's program. Thank you for listening. And I want to remind you that you can support this show by leaving me a review on Apple Podcasts and also by submitting a rating on Spotify. Enjoy UFC 301. That's coming up this weekend, and I'm going to be covering it on this program on Tuesday. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options, from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.